Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Batter up.
Listeners, it is officially October. It is October 1st. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 27. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Serovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So this is like, even though I guess the regular season is officially over, this is kind of our final regular season pod, so to speak, where we kind of do our official post-mortem on the Mets, and we talk about the playoffs a little bit, and then we go into our baseball segment for the week. The main takeaway, I think, from 2019, we've talked a lot about this on previous pods, so we won't rehash all of it, but I think, obviously, what hadn't happened yet the last time we recorded was the final game of the season, which I think was, you know, kind of emblematic of the whole 2019 Mets in a lot of ways. Like, they were out of it and they won in the most improbable fashion and they clawed back and won that game anyway. And even though it was just a meaningless baseball game, it was really fun and it felt really, really like a perfect way to end the season.
Like, when Rajay Davis was up with, I think, for some first and third and one out, I was nervous. I'm like, why am I so nervous? This game means nothing. Like, why do I care? But you can't help but care.
We care about the guys. And no, I mean, to me, that was the best part of the season, but also of the game, was just everybody having so much fun. Yeah. And really being, like, in it for each other. And it was just, it was great to see. It reminded me of everything that this season has been, and just that's what we'll all leave the season remembering, is just this group of players. It was really special. You know, I cried on the way home from the game.
Aww.
In part because, just like, I don't know, I haven't really loved a group of players like this in a while. Like, I really loved 2015. That was amazing. But even then, and this may be recency bias, but just, it's hard to top this collection we have here. There's just so many mentions all in one place.
Yeah, like, I totally, like, this was probably one of my favorite non-playoff teams, and we were even talking on Slack how we kind of even like this team more than 2016. Like, 2016, Jake was hurt at the end of the year. You know, we didn't really have the same group of guys. Like, Reyes was still there. Like, James Loney was starting a wild card. Like, it wasn't the same vibe that you got. Like, because a lot of these guys are young. They're homegrown. They're showing you the future. They're having fun. And so I think it just makes them that much more likable, knowing that you now have a solid core instead of a bunch of aging guys who probably shouldn't have been playing baseball anymore and who were lucky that they even made the wild card. But it was just, I'm just so happy that it ended on a positive note instead of, you know, maybe lamenting that they did miss the playoffs. And because that team does have the talent, then they could, I mean, they would probably be doing better than what the Nationals are doing now. Jake would never.
Jake would never. Never. Not, hashtag not my Cy Young Award winner.
No.
You hate to see it. You hate to see it.
Hate to see it.
Like, the Jake Scherzer matchup would have been what baseball deserved, like, on opening day. And it's sad that, like, just baseball as a whole isn't getting that.
for those of you who aren't paying attention to the NL wildcard game, and I can understand that if you aren't, because there aren't too many teams to be invested in that are currently in the playoffs, and we'll get back to that in a minute. But the Brewers are up on the Nats 3-0 in the bottom of the second inning. Max Scherzer already gave up a home run to Yasmani Grandal. So, yeah, not my Cy Young Award winner.
And Marcus Thames, too.
Yes, that as well. And so what I was going to say about the 2016 team versus this one, and this is kind of what I said in Slack, is that, and again, like Maggie said, this may be recency bias on my part, yeah, but talking about 2016, obviously, like, the thing about that September and that stretch run that comes to the forefront of my mind is obviously the Asdrubal Cabrera bat flip game against the Phillies, which was, like, really epic and really awesome. And it was
that
a great
was a game that I will forever remember having been at. And the Amazing Avenue editor, Chris McShane, was my ride home that day. And he was giving me a hard time about leaving, even though I was, like, 2 months pregnant and exhausted all the time. And I could have left, but I didn't. And I'm so glad I didn't, because it was amazing. And I will definitely, like, that is, I totally agree, it's like the emblematic moment of that season.
Right. And but, like, I think about that game and how great it was. And I think about the fact that the 2019 Mets had, like, six games like that.
Yes. Yeah. Totally.
Like,
yeah, that's very true.
They just kept coming. Like, the fun just, you know, it would lull for a while and it would just come roaring back. It was so great to watch.
And yeah, also, I think you saw it on the, like, you saw it when the players themselves said it. They, like, every single one said they loved playing for that team. They loved playing for each other. Like, they just seemed like just a great bunch of guys who just wanted to play baseball and have fun. And I think a lot of that stems from Pete and his enthusiasm, and just it was infectious, and it definitely showed.
Yeah, the final week of the season obviously also saw Pete Alonso break mm-hmm. the rookie home run record, and it was amazing. And you know, it's rare that you see kind of before your eyes during a season a franchise player be born the way that we have watched Pete Alonso, like, emerge. Like, it's, you know, when you watch it, like, that this is a franchise player, you know it instantly.
He's so mature beyond his years too. I mean, it's really, is he 25 yet? I mean, he's mm-mm. like, certainly not older than 25. He is, I believe, 24.
I think he's 24. He's
this baby bro, and he just, it's just like he knew all of the steps coming in. And I don't know if it's from having watched David Wright. He may have come to the organization at a time when David Wright just was not able to be present for the team. I don't know if he just is born with that shit, because he was certainly born with the dingers. That you can't learn how to hit home runs like that. But that was what really blew my mind, was just how, I can't even identify the moment this season when he became the team leader. It just sort of just was all of a sudden the state of affairs. Like, it just, poof, there he is, leader.
Yeah.
And it just seemed natural too. Like, it's not weird that this rookie is the team leader. Like, just, I don't know, just how he is, I guess. He just exudes that, you know, it factor that, you know, that we all know David Wright had too. And, you know, it is hard to define, but whatever it is, Pete's it. He's the complete package, the maturity, the love of the game, the excitement, the love of New York, being proud to be a Met. You know, we're so used to being second fiddle to the Yankees all the time. To hear somebody say, I'm a Met and I'm proud of it and I want to play for the Mets fans. Like, it's just, it's so endearing. And from him, it wasn't, you know, just trying to play to the fans. Like, from him, it was sincere. And he seemed so sincere every time he spoke in his post-game interviews. So he just... I mean, how, I mean, we always say we're a cursed franchise, but how lucky are we to go from David Wright to Pete? Like, we had not only one cornerstone, now we have two in, like, back-to-back decades.
Yeah.
It's pretty special.
Pretty awesome. And, like, even today, I think one of the defining moments of him being, like, you know, becoming a clubhouse leader was the 9/11 cleats, which we've discussed before, and the fact that he did that gesture for the team, and he even went on to donate them to the 9/11 museum. And he was there, I think, today or yesterday. I don't remember.
Today.
It was today. Yeah, and he said, like, I just want to be remembered as a good person. Like, I'm a baseball player, but I want people to think of me as just a good person. And I was like, oh my God.
Well, you know, something that I tweeted about this earlier, but something that comes up in a lot of conversations about toxic masculinity is the idea of like, okay, well, if this vision of masculinity is toxic, what's the alternative? Like, what is a non-toxic masculinity? And it's this right here. It's Pete Alonso being like this big, tough, strong dude and being entirely focused outside himself and on making things better for the people around him and on having fun and just, you know, being a good friend and teammate. Like, that's what it means to be non-toxically masculine. Like, that's, there it is. It's not some mythical idea. It can be done. Pete Alonso is doing it right now. And he's 24, so what excuse does everyone else have?
Exactly. Exactly. I could not have said that better. Like,
I know.
And people criticizing him, Yankees fans, let's be real, not people.
It's the Yankees fans.
Yeah.
Yep.
Criticizing him for having an emotional reaction to breaking that record. This is exactly like the toxic masculinity we're talking about. The fact that you would shame a player for showing emotion and for showing his personality and for showing how much passion he has for the game is toxic. It's gross. Stop doing it. Like, you should. I love Aaron Judge, and I will say that unabashedly. He's a good player, and he's a really cool player to have on your baseball team. I sure as heck wish he was on my baseball team. And we can.
And
love
he's a
both
stand-up guy,
right? We can love both of them and not criticize the way Pete shows emotion on the field as, you know, not manly or not, you know, not what a baseball player does or whatever the fuck your toxic notions are of that. Let's not.
And, like, wasn't the whole theme of this year, like, let the kids play? Like, who captured that saying more than Pete? Like, he was just having fun, and he realized a dream, a lifelong dream. Like, God forbid you chase your dreams. Like, oh. Like, I can't even imagine what that feels like to work so hard.
You're supposed to chase your dreams, but you're not supposed to like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Stomp around and talk about how it was better 10 years ago. That's what you do.
And you do it with class by shaving your mustache.
Yeah, middle of the game.
Okay, but really though, I'm so glad he shaved the mustache, because, like, let's be clear, we love Pete. This podcast stands Pete Alonso like crazy, but that mustache was pretty bad.
Yeah,
pretty bad.
And what kills me is it was the, like, when he was talking about the 9/11 cleats and he had the horrible mustache. This is serious, and you're so distracting.
It's gonna be in the pictures forever.
Yes.
Damn it.
This is right up there with, like, a purple prom tuxedo. Actually, well, sounds boss. Never mind.
Well, Mike Piazza had just dyed his hair before 9/11, so he has all the blonde.
The blondes.
So it's like,
yeah, we'll
guys,
always be the, like,
choices.
Early thousands frosted tips, Mike Piazza. Oh, forever. God, fashion choices. But speaking of letting the kids play, quick shout out to Major League Baseball, because even though we have to drag them for when they do things wrong, and we will do that in this very episode, we should in turn, though, praise them when they do things right. That playoff ad that they have running right now is so good.
I have not seen it
either.
Oh, you guys have to watch the video. Oh my goodness. It's like, it's you know, it's a ad campaign for the playoffs, and it's basically a, like, let the kids play, but I think the tag is "We Play Loud," I think is the tag.
Oh, I saw some of the print pieces from that run.
Yeah,
I like the look of it. We'll look it up.
It's so good. It's basically like old-timey baseball scenes, except they've like photoshopped in the current players, and it's kind of like this homage to like, oh, back in my day baseball used to be better, but it's like putting the new players in being like, actually it's better now. And it's it's so good, because it's like all the crowd scenes from like black and white crowd scenes of crowds cheering, except it's Aaron Judge hitting the home run or whatever. Oh, it's really cool. It's a really good ad. You guys should watch it. It's really good.
Can you imagine if people nowadays would like run onto the field and tear it to pieces after their teams won? Like, Jesus. That's, you talk about like the things in the olden days. And I realize that some of our listeners just got super mad at me for saying olden days. I'm sorry. like the things that kind of don't register when I think back, like you just run onto the field and like tear it up. That's terrifying.
Yeah,
but
like,
okay, olden like people, whatever, floats your boat.
The scenes from like the 69 World Series and like Seavers like dodging fans, like that just doesn't compute.
Yeah, it's wild to me.
Yo, Mets Twitter would really mess that stuff up. That would be a bad scene.
Yeah. Yes, Citi Field would need to be completely overhauled.
So I guess the only bit of Mets news that we kind of need to discuss, besides, you know, the 2019 Mets were fun, this was a fun season, is the fact that Mickey Callaway's job currently hangs in the balance, like, literally. The Mets are kind of trying to decide whether to bring him back or not, and they still have not decided that. And
Bring him back!
Don't do it! Don't let the record fool you.
Yeah,
don't
right.
Do it.
Don't let that second half trick you. Already a record number of teams are looking for new managers. A bunch of teams have already fired their managers or parted ways with their managers mutually, as the case may be. And I feel like the only two teams left that I think that might fire their managers that haven't are the Mets and the Phillies, basically. And so do you guys, I know that we don't have to rehash the whole like reasons why we think Mickey should be fired, because I think friends of the pod know that we
didn't all
agree
on that. Didn't we have an entire episode like basically entirely focused on us being angry at Mickey Callaway?
Yes,
I think we did. Really did. Yes.
We did. This is on brand.
Yes. So we won't rehash all of that, but what I will ask you both is, A, do you think the Mets will fire Mickey Callaway, which is a different question of whether they should, and B, if they do, who do you think that they should replace him with?
This is hard, because
I feel like it's a 50-50.
Yeah, because I don't see them paying two managers.
But they have paid two managers before, and he also made them look bad at times, which I think, amazingly, despite the fact that the Mets look bad almost all of the time, that does seem to be something that ostensibly upsets them, and that seems to me like it would be the thing that would get movement in that area.
The only thing I don't think they'll hire Madden, because I think he'll be out of their price range, which, fine. I don't want anything to do with Madden. I don't want him anywhere near this organization.
Yeah.
Let the Angels or the Padres, let them deal with that.
Not particularly interested in the Addison Russell apologist being my manager, so.
No.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but probably every other managerial candidate on the planet. That's something I've been thinking about, too. It's just that I really hate how he handled that, but I also have to admit that, like, I think probably 27 out of 30 major league managers would do it that way.
Yeah,
so,
you're probably right.
I'm just... But I also, I'm not crazy about Madden anyway. Like, I think, I don't know. He seems to not get, I mean, I don't know. I'm saying this about a guy who brought a team to the World Series, but he doesn't seem to always get the best out of his players.
And but also, he had the talent. Like, this is always the argument. Like, was is Alex Cora any good? Or was that team just so talented it didn't matter?
Right.
So
I wouldn't mind, speaking of, I mean, good teams, but the only, like, big name that I've been sort of like, huh, I could see that, is Girardi. I've always really liked and respected him as a baseball guy. I think he, you know, this is, you hear often they talk about, like, players who know how to win in New York, and I think it's mostly bullshit, but I do think there is something to be said for knowing how to handle the media in New York.
Especially after Callaway handled it poorly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, manhandled it.
yeah, right.
But, like, Girardi is a guy who I could see being comfortable here. I don't know that he wants to manage the Mets. I don't know that the Mets want him to manage them. But, like, I think if anybody's going to come in, it might be a surprise. Like, kind of Callaway was kind of a surprise. But if it is going to be kind of one of the usual suspects, that's sort of where I would lean personally.
I would too, but I feel like, one, he's probably out of their price range, and two, he's not a yes man. He will absolutely tell Jeff where to go.
Yeah, that's and where I worry about that.
Yeah, and I don't see that flying. I feel like Jeff Wilpon wants control, and that would never fly with Girardi.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd be fine with Girardi in that I think that there are far worse choices the Mets could make, believe
me.
Oh,
yeah.
I think for that reason, it's unlikely. Less because of the money and more because of the, like, fact that he just won't, like, lay down and give the, like, and read Jeff Wilpon's texts aloud as statements. Like, that's not what Jar Girardi is going to do. I foresee that would be something that, like, someone like Clint Hurdle would do, which I could see them doing that. Although, I don't know. The Pirates are such a trash fire that I think the Mets would probably avoid hiring their deposed manager.
I would
probably
hope so,
but I feel a little optimistic about that. Just a little.
Just a little. So,
well, according to Martino, grain of salt, Girardi wants to manage again and would consider the Mets.
Okay. Well,
I can believe that.
Cool.
Yep.
Like I said, I would probably be happy with that just because I think that, of the options, like, the Mets could fuck it up so bad that it would be unbelievable.
God. I'm just going through this list, sorry.
Of all the managers?
Martino. Oh, no, it's real bad.
It's bad.
Oh, it is bad. Like, David Cone? What? Okay, Beltran, yes, but I don't know if Beltran would ever come.
Beltran's not going to manage the
he
Mets.
He would not come to the Mets in a million years.
Yeah, this is quite a list from Martino. Oh, yeah, Joe Espada, the Astros bench coach.
I thought I saw something about Vance Wilson.
Yes, and Vance Wilson.
Which is, I mean,
he's not on his list, but they said, yeah.
That's
Mike Matheny.
I'd have to research about Vance Wilson, because Vance Wilson is kind of like an unknown factor here, because he's never had a major league managing job.
Like Mickey Callaway.
Exactly. I feel like the Mets could do well to avoid hiring someone with no major league managerial experience again. That would probably be a good thing if they
I mean, if there's
that.
Anything the Mets love, it's overcorrections. So I could definitely see
it's
them
Clint
going
Hurdle.
Like a Dusty Baker route or something like that.
Dusty wouldn't be awful, actually.
Dusty wouldn't be awful, but that's where the money factor comes in, because Dusty has basically said out and out, like, I am not managing unless you pay me enough.
Fair.
Right. Well, he's earned it. He's earned it.
Hashtag mood.
So, So I think that they could be priced out of Dusty Baker, because, like, he's not the same as Girardi, where it's, like, clear he, like, really wants to manage again. So he doesn't seem desperate. He's kind of like, I mean, I'm retired. You can pay me tons of money to come manage your team. And, oh, yeah, pull my leg, I'll do it. But so I don't know. I feel like it's Girardi or some terrible option.
Please, God, not David Cole.
And the problem is, like I mentioned at the top of the segment, there are like a record number of teams looking for managers. So the problem is also that the Mets are competing with all these other teams for the same, like basically the same pool of candidates. Cause like constantly when managers get fired, it's like a musical chairs situation and they just like move around teams. And then like there are destinations more attractive than the New York Mets, knowing what the whole baseball world knows about the Wilpons and their level of micromanaging. Like, you could go to a franchise that won't do that.
Okay, it was Mark Feinsand
who tweeted, yeah.
Yeah, one name to keep an eye on once teams begin interviewing for vacant managerial jobs, Vance Wilson. The Royals bullpen coach is highly regarded by many, and some executives believe he absolutely has a future as a manager. But they said the same thing about Mickey Callaway.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And he blew everyone away in that interview room.
Yeah, he had a binder that he bought to the interview.
Yeah, boy. And he's a former Met, too, so I just feel like there's something there. I don't know. But yeah.
They said Brody had a relationship with the Astros, so that's why they were thinking Espada.
Right, because they wanted to hire their former Astros guy.
It'll be interesting to see, because, of course, this was... Mickey Callaway was Sandy Alderson's parting gift to us. And while I seriously doubt that, I think that the relationship had already broken down so much with Alderson by that point that I seriously doubt he had as much sway in that as he ought to have, given that he was the general manager. This will be Brody's first crack, assuming that they do move on from Callaway. This would be Brody's first crack at filling a big coaching spot. So it'd be interesting to see which way he goes. We know how he goes with his players, which is any former client he can get his hands on, he will. But I don't know how that's going to translate in coaching.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
We shall see. So before we wrap up this segment with a Dollars for Dingers pledge drive update, let's just really quick go through. So since we kind of ostensibly have to talk about the playoffs because it is October, there is playoff baseball happening, even if the Mets aren't a part of it. Where are you guys on, like, what team or teams would you like to see win? What teams would you like really not like to see win? I think that we're kind of all on a consensus there, but what do you guys think? Who are you rooting for?
Is none of them a correct answer?
Yeah,
because that's kind of where I'm at. Like, it's like, I know I've talked about hockey before, but for me, it's for nothing beats the hockey playoffs for me, and I hate less teams in hockey, so it's easier for me to watch that even without a rooting interest. But with baseball, I just hate with a fiery passion, the fiery wrath of a thousand suns, like so many teams that it sickens me to watch the games. So I'd rather not put myself through that mental stress and just like watch Chopped and This Is Us and just ignore that baseball is still happening without my meds.
Okay, so Linda is rooting for, I'm going to go with a cup of hot cocoa and a good book.
Yes, yes. That is so right, yes.
Also,
and I just needed to get cool now to do that, not 90 degrees.
Piss off, Linda. No thanks.
I hold grudges.
That's okay.
Like Shane Victorino still like gets my blood boiling.
Oh my God.
Oh no, fuck that guy. So I have an easy answer because I have some members of my extended family who are huge, huge Dodgers fans. And I went to a game with them at Dodger Stadium a couple years ago and it was wonderful. So I just root for the Dodgers. It's an easy choice because I have the family connection. I can be happy that they're happy. And it's an easy choice because they tend to win a lot of games. So I don't mind it so much. I would love to see them win the World Series. I do like the Twins a lot. I am Twins, Rays. There's a handful of teams on the AL side that I wouldn't mind seeing. But Dodgers is my pick, so there we go. I'm terrible.
That makes sense. I'm probably rooting AL unless it's the Yankees, obviously, in the World Series, because it'll probably, like, if it's the, I wouldn't mind seeing the Astros again, honestly, even though, obviously, I hate Osuna. That's, like, the one thing. Like, other than that, I actually really like the Astros because, like Maggie, I have extended family. My uncle moved to Houston a while ago, and he has really, really taken up the Astros as his second team. And even when they were, like, dreadful, dreadful bad, he still rooted for them. And so I'd like to see him happy. And I'm actually going to be in Houston during the ALCS. So if they advance that far,
that'll be fun.
It'll be fun. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to be able to go to games because, like, A, I'm not going to have time because I'm going to be at a conference, and B, like, who has that kind of money to drop on a playoff game with teams that you don't root for? But it'll be fun because I'm staying with my uncle while I'm in Houston, and he's going to be, like, really invested in the game. So getting to watch them with him will be fun. So I'll probably, if the Astros are still in it at that point, I'll probably be rooting pretty hard for them because I'll be rooting alongside him. So that's probably my top pick, and I wouldn't mind either the A's or the Rays winning, even though I do have a small problem with the fact that it justifies the current trend in baseball of, like, not spending money for them to win things, which we will get back to later. But it's still far less onerous to me than, like, these dynasty teams winning things.
Yeah, the Dodgers haven't won in a long time,
but they're good every year. Yeah. And they have the highest payroll, and I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think
we want them to spend, Allison. We want them to spend.
I know.
Yeah,
they're doing it right. Damn it.
The A's are, like, the most inoffensive, I think. Like, yes. They just have, like, a bunch of fun dudes. So I don't know. If I had to pick, it would probably be Oakland.
Yeah,
that's fair. They're like a non. They're like the beige of baseball.
Exactly. Like, you can't get offended by beige. You just can't.
No, it's true. It's true.
Fine.
The only National League team, like the National League team that is the least, like, offensive to me is probably the Brewers, honestly.
I like the Brewers. No, I'm holding a grudge because they never lost in September, so I
know, it's annoying, but
that's fair.
And Hader and Braun can't do it.
They have individual players I dislike. That's the big problem. Like, as a team, as a franchise, I have nothing against them. But they have Hader, and they have Braun, and they have Moustakas, and I don't like any of those
players. This is the second time they've screwed us out of a playoff spot. 2008 was them, too. So, I'm holding a grudge for that.
But I also have a bias for them because I also went to Miller Park and had a lovely time there. So I feel like this is what ultimately seems to affect my rooting more than anything outside of, like, the obvious, is whether or not I had fun at your baseball stadium. So,
I mean, that's fair.
Totally fair metric. And, like, the Brewers, like, it would be a lot easier to root for them if Christian Yelich came back, because I love him as a player.
Yeah,
he's pretty great.
It's kind of sad that they're without him, but, you know, I do definitely want them to continue to just, like, curb stomp the Nationals, although the Nationals do have a run now.
Freaking Trey Turner, thanks Padres for trading him for no reason,
god damn it. So now it's 3-1 Brewers in the top of the fourth. Anywho, so before we move on to our baseball segment for the week, we just wanted to give a quick Dollars for Dingers update and shout out. Maggie updated our spreadsheet because obviously our spreadsheet calculated all the donations automatically, just multiplied by the dollar amount that you pledged per home run. But a bunch of people did custom ones, which is really fun. I did extra money for, like, grand slams. Some people did extra money for, like, Pete breaking the record or, like, particular players hitting home runs. So we had to, you know, go through by hand, and Maggie was a star and did all of that and got.
I had a lot of work that I did not want to do. Don't thank me. Thank Columbia University.
Thank you, Columbia University.
Thank you.
Giving Maggie things that she wants to procrastinate so that she could instead go through and manually calculate all of our pledges on our spreadsheet. So, Maggie, do you want to give a quick update to all of our listeners?
So I do want to give a quick update. For starters, we already announced that the raffle brought in $1,000 on tickets. But the pledge drive took in way more than that. We made $5,582 for the National Domestic Violence Hotline this month. You guys made $5,582. You are amazing. Don't forget to donate if you have not already. And so I could not imagine doing this in any way without thanking each of you by name. So thank you so much to Kellyanne, Dave, John, Josh, Alice, Darren, Matt, Michael, Ellen, Brian, Alex, Peter, Jeremy, Chris, Roger, Kevin, Sharon, Laura, Brian, Celia, Jaiwoo, Laura, Peter, Corey, Jack, Pat, Kenneth, Victoria, Shake Shack Line, Russ Seller, Paul, Rob, Donna, Marilyn Monk, Eric Vass, and Tom. Thank you guys, all of you. Yay! We did something amazing this month.
We love you.
That's it. It was amazing. Thank you. This was like a random idea I had when I had insomnia in early August. And I was like, guys, what if we did this fundraiser? And I never in a million years thought it would turn into this. And we have all of you to thank for it. Everyone who came to the fundraiser, everyone who retweeted us, everyone who pledged. An extra special thank you to Brian, our producer with Amazing Avenue, who did so much to get all of this together and to keep us going.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Yeah, that's just thank you.
Thanks,
this is
podcast
great.
Dad.
Yeah, 10 out of 10 would do again. Yeah.
Would do again. Will likely do again. This was, thank you guys so much. We are so overwhelmed. Amazing. Amazing. You guys rock. We have the best listeners in the entire world.
And also, thank you to Cuppa Cubby Blue, too, for partnering with us.
Yes, yes.
We love you, ladies.
You guys rock. Thank you so much for helping to raise money on your end, amplify the fundraiser. You guys are the best. And we can bond over mutually just missing the playoffs. But it's a reason to keep us invested, like we've been saying, in the month of September when things like this happen. So, you know. So when we are going to now take a break. When we get back, we are going to talk about the state of baseball today and tanking teams. So stay tuned for that. And we are back. Before we get into our meat of our baseball discussion this week, in keeping with, you know, the mission of this podcast, we do need to make a quick mention of something that happened this week that Major League Baseball is trying to, you know, as usual, kind of sneak under the headlines and rely on people not paying attention. So we're going to make sure that people are paying attention. Luke Heimlich pitched in a Major League Baseball sanctioned game. So we should probably pay attention to that garbage. He pitched in the Arizona Fall League, inter-winter league series between the Scottsdale Scorpios and the Caneros de los Mochis. So, yep, he pitched in that game, and it's a Major League Baseball sanctioned game. So this is another kind of stepping stone to try to sneak him in the back door of Major League Baseball. And we, as, you know, conscious consumers of the game, as ethical consumers of the game, cannot allow this shit to occur.
Yeah, it just seems like he's trying to find a back door in, because the front door thankfully slammed in his face, but he's not giving up. And
but there's money in it.
Yeah.
He exactly. can make money, and they can make money off of him, especially because he will be cheaper because he's a child molester.
Yep. And as we've seen, baseball has no scruples when it comes to that. As long as you're talented, they don't care.
Yep. So keep an eye on it.
Yep.
Let them know you're watching.
Let's not allow this to happen, to keep escalating. So the topic that we wanted to cover this week is something that's been on the forefront of people's minds kind of this entire season, kind of really the past 2 years, I feel like, especially. It's a trend that's been continuing for a long time, and I feel like it's kind of reached its boiling point. We recently found out this week, and these things are connected, that baseball had its lowest overall attendance in 16 years. And people like to talk about the death of baseball all the time, like every year for whatever reasons, and it's almost always overstated because baseball isn't going anywhere. I don't think the sport is dying. However, this drain on attendance is alarming, and Rob Manfred can talk all he wants about pace of play. He can talk all he wants about the intentional walk, the pitch clock, whatever else. But it's because teams are tanking. That is the reason why people are not going to games.
The correlation is so clear. It's, it's, you know, and there's always going to be the exception of like, oh, well, this team wasn't tanking and they had a down year. But the trend is so strong. It's undeniable. And it's, you know, MLB has to think about how they can restructure the incentives so that it is financially beneficial to win baseball games, because that's just it. Like, most of their money now is coming in through these media deals that will go through really regardless of how the team is doing. And so you could just kind of spend, you know, 80 mil a year on a 70 win team and have a franchise worth, you know, $1 billion+. And that's part of what they need to do as a business, as a, you know, as a government sanctioned monopoly. They need to figure out how to change their own incentives so that the game is worth winning.
And there's better example of that point that Maggie just made about doing just enough to have a profitable franchise without actually trying to win than the Boston Red Sox. They are the best example of that this year, because they openly, and they said the quiet parts out loud. Like, they're not even trying to hide it from you. They openly fired their GM because he had the audacity to want to try to spend money to win. They won the World Series last year. This year, they missed the playoffs by quite a significant margin. Like, they weren't even, I mean, they had a good record, but they weren't even close to a playoff contending team in the final month of the season. They weren't even close. And they basically were like, yeah, we fired our GM because we didn't have the same vision about, like, trying to win.
Well, I was just going to say that that's the scary part, that even winning the World Series isn't worth it to these owners. They said it was the Sunday after they won the World Series that the owner called Dombrowski angry. Like, you can't even enjoy winning the ultimate, what everybody wants. Like, why are you even in this game if you can't even reach your goal? Like, isn't that the goal?
Fact is that the goal is another, you know, another yacht for the Ricketts family. Like, it's,
yeah,
it's, that's just it. It's a money driver, which is, you know, I mean, okay, so sure, that's how you run a business, is to make money, but that's why they need to think about how their own rules are enabling this culture. And so part of that, I mean, I think a salary floor can be combined with a salary cap. That's fine, based on a percentage of league revenues, to try to just, again, incentivize owners to invest in their team, because right now the incentives are really skewed and it's showing in the on-field product.
Yeah. And people talk a lot about changing the way the draft works. And I think that we can investigate that regarding the way that drives tanking. There were four 100 loss teams this year. That's incredible. Three of them were in the American League. And one of them was in the National League.
Imagine you lose 100 games and you get the fourth draft pick.
So, like, it's gotten to the point where, and I do think to a certain extent, the way that the draft works does incentivize tanking a little bit.
And I think it's going to be, teams, I hope, are learning that it actually is, like, not a statistical benefit.
Right. And we've gotten to the point where we've reached saturation now with tanking teams, right?
Yeah.
Four 100 lost teams and even more 90 plus lost teams. So you could, I think that someone in the Slack said that there is a team that was 69 and 90 whatever many losses that is to add up to 162. I'm not doing the math right now. And they have like the seventh pick or something. Like what? What? They didn't even win 70 games and they have the seventh pick. Like you're at saturation now. So whatever like teensy tiny benefit you're getting from tanking via the draft is like barely even there anymore because there's so many other teams doing the exact same thing. So I think that fixing the draft or like doing some sort of lottery or whatever, like I don't think that should be the priority necessarily. It should be something that can be considered in the laundry list of things they should do. What I think is driving this is the immense amount of control that teams have over players early in their careers.
Yes.
That needs to stop. They need to fix it. Players need to reach free agency during their primes, which will drive spending on free agents rather than prospect hoarding. That is what's driving the tanking to me.
Yeah, it's definitely a big part of it. Like, and it just feeds like how many times on Twitter do you see, like, I know hindsight is 2020, but let's go back before the 2019 season when we traded for Cano and Diaz. Everybody flipped their shit. Justin Dunn had never pitched in a game. Kelenic has never pitched in a game. It's like you're trained now to just always believe in the future and like shun any team that had the audacity to try and improve their team. Like,
well, like, and I mean, look at the Stroman trade.
Yeah.
Now, that was a trade that was for a good player with another year of control after this one.
A good move.
Well established, not much of a salary cost. And it cost the Mets like, what, two mediocre pitching prospects, and everyone just lost it.
Yeah. Everybody thinks like Anthony Kay is going to be the next like Clayton Kershaw. Like, no.
Except anyone who has ever watched him pitch. Like, the people who actually watch him day in, day out were like, maybe a third starter.
People were saying the Blue Jays were like the other side, like that's all the Blue Jays got. Like, they kind of got a better deal. Like, everybody was kind of like raising their eyebrows at the Blue Jays, which made me feel better. Like, oh, hey, we got this great pitcher for his deal. But everybody else was like, how could you get the farm system for Marcus Stroman? Blah, blah, blah. Like, I was happy. I was excited.
Everyone should be happy by that move. That should be. But.
Like, why is
the incentives aren't there?
Yeah, like, why is the reaction immediately, this was bad, we got rid of our prospects, that's awful. Like, because they're cheap? That's what the owners want you to believe. Like, they want you to root for cheap players. No.
Now, people are still saying, like, oh, well, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have that year of Pete Alonso back? And it's like, you know what's standing between the Mets and that year of Pete Alonso?
Money.
Fair market salary. Like, that's it.
You would trade him breaking the rookie home run record for an extra year of control. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
Like, it's not like, oh, he's going to be a free agent. There's nothing we can do. That kind of sucks. Like, there's ways around this.
Like, you just could extend him. It's very easy. And then you don't have to talk about it ever again. Like, And to go back to the Stroman trade for a minute, like, I think that people just get so, like, caught in their internet silos, their team-specific internet silos, where all the only people they talk to are, like, other prospect nerds and, like, other wannabe GMs. And they don't, like, step out of themselves and realize that these are two prospects that no one outside of Mets world has ever heard of. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It's also to remember that, like, the Mets' best prospects are
not
great. Like, that's the problem.
Yeah. And also, would they develop the prospects? Like, well, the jury's out on that, too.
And this is all not to, like, prospects are great to have. There are certainly lots of scenarios where teams can and should trade older players and, you know, more success established players for prospects.
The Carlos Beltran trade. It has a time and a place.
Right. Yes. Absolutely. That was a great trade for everybody. But like what's happening now is that players are getting moved from team to team to minimize the salary that everyone involved is getting. Like it's not about, you know, distributing resources usefully. Like, you know, Carlos Beltran was not useful to the 2011 Mets, but he was really useful to the 2011 Giants, or maybe he wasn't. I don't think they did that well that year, but in any case, as opposed to, you know, the Mets have another 2 years of Beltran and they could really develop a winning team before then, but let's dump them for prospects anyway and see what happens.
Well, and also part of the reason why you have prospects is sometimes you got to cash in your trade chips. Like, yep. When you are, like, yeah. 2015, when you're on the cusp and you're missing that one last piece, you go out and you get that one last piece, it makes a big difference. And if you're going to say, no, we never want to go for it because these prospects may eventually turn into something, but it just defeats the point of sport, I would think.
Right. And like when you're out here on Twitter.com while the Mets are like out here in July and August, like walking off games and having like one of the most exciting like little runs that they've had in quite some time, and you're out here on Twitter.com counting the years of control they gave up for Marcus Stroman, I think you need to reevaluate your priorities as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will never understand. Like, that has, like, that attitude robs you of so much joy.
Yeah, and not being able to enjoy Marcus Stroman, right. Who is great. He's a character. He loved being on the team. He was always one of the first running out of the dugout. And, like, they just want to be right. Like, oh, see, he's pitching bad again. The Mets were 8-3 in his starts. Like, the trade worked. The reason why they missed the playoffs was not because they traded two prospects for Marcus Stroman.
Right. Ugh. And it's just, like trying is good. More teams should try. Like, we've said this on the podcast before. Like,
and we even saw that. We saw Citi Field. We saw the life come back just because they won a week's worth of games all of a sudden, and then it snowballed from there. Like, fans want to go to games. They want to have fun. They want to root for their team. They want to cheer. They want to buy their merchandise. They want to support their team. And if you have nothing to cheer for, are you going to be motivated to buy a Mike Trout jersey? Maybe. I don't know.
And, like, not... And I think that just, like, I think that people who are in favor of, like, doing full teardowns and things like that, like, not every team can be the Astros. It's just not going to happen for every
team. Especially when every team is trying to be the Astros. Mm-hmm. And again, like, I feel like the Marlins should be every team's worst case scenario. I mean, they were...
Well, and the Reds,
they were
too.
A really strong offensive team.
They had three star outfielders. They traded all.
Yeah, they had like three all-star outfielders. And they just didn't have any pitching. And in the middle of an offseason in which there was quite a lot of available pitching, top shelf and in between, they traded everybody for peanuts. And they have played atrociously bad, but still not bad enough to get high draft picks. In part because now they have pitching. Now their young pitchers have developed, but they can't hit at all. And it's just, they tore apart that entire team. They tore apart an all-star outfield, and they got nothing.
Well, even I saw a tweet about the Reds, where the Reds had Johnny Cueto, Todd Frazier, Jay Bruce, Brandon Phillips, and Aroldis Chapman, and they're the only person on their current roster from trading all those trades is Jose Peraza.
Yikes.
So, and when was the last time the Reds had a winning season? I think Jay Bruce was involved, but I can't remember what it was. Because I think he had a walk-off or something, but I can't remember what year that was.
Was that the year that they were no-hit in the playoffs? Oh, by
Halliday.
Yes.
That's it. You're right.
True.
Well, that ended well.
Oops.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. I have a front row seat. Well, had a front row seat and may have again. I don't know. But, like, the Orioles are the team that I pay the most attention to besides the Mets. And they're doing it now. They're doing the full tank. Like, they're not even trying to hide it. They fired. And it's not just that they changed their GM. They changed their manager. They, you know, they traded Manny Machado. They got rid of all their players. They, you know, they fired, like, a whole bunch of their scouts, like, a whole bunch of them, like, baseball lifers, like, people that the city of Baltimore and, you know, the scouting community respected immensely. They fired everyone, and they just cleaned house, and they're just basically like, we're gonna suck for 6 years now. And so this is year two of suck, and it's not going great. Like, they're not, like, I know.
But also, they didn't even get the top draft pick this year.
No. They did not.
They still didn't. Get it.
I told my dad before the season started, I said to him, I have never in my natural life seen a team worse than this Orioles team. I couldn't fathom, like, on paper, this was before the season started, before I even watched any of the games. Like, on paper, I was like, this is the worst baseball team in my lifetime. I have never seen a worse baseball team. And there was a worse baseball team this year. Yeah. It blows
in the
my
same
goddamn
league.
Mind.
Who'd they even get for Machado?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ was not included in the trade.
One of them is playing.
I don't think he wants anything to do with the Orioles.
One of them is playing for them now, and the other two are not.
I mean, that in and of itself is a really bad sign, so.
Yeah.
I mean, dang it, like, it doesn't work on a... It doesn't
Yusnel
work in a winning
Diaz,
and losing stance.
Right-hander Dean Kremer, third baseman Rylan Bannon, righty Zach Pop, and third baseman Breivik Valera. So Yusnel Diaz and I think Breivik Valera have played in the major leagues. None of those other guys have. And I just, like, Yusnel Diaz might be good, but, like, he's not good yet.
I've heard of Breivik Valera. That's a start.
It's just...
Well, like, it doesn't work from a wins and losses perspective at this point, just because it's everyone's trying to do it, and it just don't, like, what's gonna kill baseball is everybody trying not to win. That sucks. Nobody wants that. Fix it.
Yeah, like, I think angry fans isn't what's gonna kill baseball. It's apathetic fans. Like, if it's just years and years of pioneers of just losing, like, they're going to lose interest. If people like, oh, well, I got better things to do with my time. Like, I'm not going to go to Camden Yards. Like, and then that just gets weeded out. Like, there's going to be no next generation of Orioles fans.
And the Orioles have, like, let me just tell you, the Orioles have an extremely dedicated and forgiving fan base. Like, way more, like I'm used to Mets Twitter, which is extremely unforgiving at times. Like, in comparison, Orioles fans are so chill. They have way more chill than we can ever hope to have in our entire lives. And if you've pissed them off and made them not want to go to their gorgeous ballpark, like a top five ballpark in Major League Baseball, you've got a problem. You've got a huge problem. Because they're usually, I mean, Baltimore's not a very big city, to be fair. So that's, like, kind of the counterbalance. It's like, obviously the Mets have, like, a much larger market than the Orioles could ever hope to have of fans. But the Orioles fans, like, show up for their team no matter what, basically. They're very forgiving of, like, bullshit. They haven't, the Orioles, like, they had, like, single, like, thousands of people at those games. Like, it was, like, 4,000 people at those games. It's, like, it's so sad. It breaks my heart, honestly.
It's not good for baseball.
It's very bad. If you guys want to read about, like, the... If you guys don't have to take our word for it that tanking is the biggest driver of the drop in attendance, you can read about it online, people much smarter than me have done analyses of this. Rob Arthur of Baseball Prospectus, amazing, amazing writer, did an entire analysis of, you know, how much is tanking responsible for baseball's drop in attendance. Hint, it's a big chunk of it. He basically did like two components to his analysis. The first was showing that competitive games do drive attendance. So he said that the playoff odds were the most important predictor of attendance besides ballpark size. So he built a model where he tried to like basically predict teams' attendance and then like tested that model against teams' actual attendance. And he put in like a whole bunch of covariates like ballpark size, the team's playoff odds, the weather that day, so on and so forth, like a whole bunch of factors. And the model was like R equals 0.95. So highly correlated between predicted attendance and actual attendance, this model. And the biggest factor besides ballpark size in that model was playoff odds. If the team's playoff odds was less than 5% at the time of that game, the attendance was likely to be extremely low. So he showed that the playoff odds are the driver. The second thing he showed, which is the second very important component of this, is showing that the teams with the with daily average playoff odds below 5% has increased steadily over the past few years. So not only is the team's playoff odds a huge factor on whether people will go to the games, more and more teams have playoff odds less than 5%. So that it's getting on, like, I think this year it was roughly 40% of teams on any given day had a playoff odds less than 5%. That's appalling.
Oh, my God.
That's appalling. At points in the season, that was the Mets. Not all of the season, but parts of it.
But the Mets are a good reminder that, like, if you stay in it, the fans will stay in it. You know, the Mets didn't go to the playoffs, but they had serviceable playoff odds for much of the year, and you could tell the difference in the stadiums that it was
absolutely
a much, much more filled out crowd.
Yep. And, you know, going back to our earlier theme of praising, you know, people praising baseball or praising ownership when they do things right, the rare times they do things right, to counterbalance all the times that we are willing to criticize them when they do things wrong. As much as I drag the Wilpons over the coals and will continue to do so until the day that I die, until the day they sell the team, whichever freaking one comes first. The one thing that is admirable about them, and Jarrett Seidler says this on For All You Kids Out There all the time, and he's absolutely right. The one admirable quality about the Wilpons is that they will never tank. I feel fairly confident. Will they build a sustained winner? Probably not. But I feel fairly confident that I think Fred and Jeff Wilpon actually do nominally care about winning.
Yeah, they had every opportunity to tank after 2009. And they, you know, and Elderson came in and over time, you know, thinned out a lot of who they had on that team. You know, he traded Ari Dickey, didn't re-sign Jose Reyes, all that jazz. But, you know, they never traded David Wright. They had, and of course, am I remembering any of them now? No, because it was an incredibly unmemorable stretch of teams there, but they had other resources that they could have traded out, and they didn't because they won't commit to a full rebuild. And, you know, that may be maddening for a lot of people, but also, like, let's be real. Would the Mets get a full rebuild right?
No.
Absolutely not.
I mean, their problem is they do go for it and they won't tank, but they just aren't self-aware enough to back away and let the baseball people do the baseball things.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. That's their biggest issue.
The biggest issue with the Wilpons is that they micromanage. They, you know, they actually care so much that they, like, micromanage to the level of, like, I think Rajay Davis on a minor league deal might be a good... I'm exaggerating, but only a little bit. Like,
they
really
care
really
about it.
Bit.
They're just always wrong.
Exactly. Like, they don't let the baseball people make the decisions because they fancy themselves baseball men. They think that they're smart baseball men.
Womp womp.
which is unfortunate because they're not. And, like, you know, it'd be one thing if they were, but they, all their notions of, like, what is smart baseball moves are, you know, stuck in, like, the 1980s. And that's being kind, honestly.
Well, I saw something the other day where it said Fred Wilpon had, like, ideas about the bullpen. I'm like, oh, I'm sure she does.
Don't have ideas. That's
bad. Have you heard about this newfangled idea called a closer? It's where you save a really good reliever for the end of the game.
Wow.
Tony La Russa fellas really got it.
I heard that when you pitch a guy with the same side matchup, he does better.
Yeah, he's basically...
Okay, so what you're saying is you should only ever have completely left-handed or right-handed lineups.
Obvs.
Based on who's opposing.
Yes. Okay.
Check.
Totally Mr. Burns. It's called playing the percentages.
Yeah. So our ownership sucks at making decisions. They're very bad at, like, doing baseball things. But I think the sad part is that they even try at all makes them better than, like, 50% of Major League Baseball owners.
Yeah. Which is sad.
Exactly.
Because it's not a high bar to clear. Let's be real.
It's not. No. Nope. Unfortunately, that's where the bar is right now. Do better. Do better, owners.
Spend money.
You're freaking billionaires. If, like, I don't know, if you're really like, I'm a businessman and this is, like, my business, just go invest in a fucking hedge fund. Don't buy a baseball team. I'm just so sick to death of this shit.
Yeah, like, what fun are they getting out of this, really?
Like... Just
a bunch of other guys who look and talk just like them telling them how smart they are.
Yes. Yeah. And, like, I don't know, like, sports is such like going back to the toxic masculinity thing. It's like an old timey man thing. Like, I have a sports team. I'm such an important man. And, like, it's my toy that I play with. Like, it's, you know, if you like ideal sports owner just writes the checks and allows them to spend basically as much money as they want within, like, some level of reason.
And hire smart baseball people to make the smart decisions. And then they just put their name on the check. Okay, I found the tweet. It's Tim Healy. Mickey Callaway said he met with the Mets CEO Fred Wilpon and the pitching coaches a few days ago for an hour to talk about plans for a couple of relievers this offseason.
Woof, don't do it.
Nope. Don't have ideas.
They've just been humoring Mickey.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Mm. I don't want to know. It's going to be bad. Bears.
Yeah, that's going nowhere good.
Yeah, so stop tanking. It sucks. It's super lame. Don't do it anymore. that's our spiel for this week. So we're going to take one more break. And when we get back, we're going to finish the show like we always do with walk-off wins. So stay tuned for that. And we are back. We are going to finish off the show this week with walk-off wins, like we always do, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Maggie, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So I'm cheating a little bit because Sunday's game is definitely part of my walk-off win, but in general, just the whole weekend with my family, because... we went out to Coney Island on Saturday. It was the first time the kids had ever been to Coney Island. We went with my sister, who we all adore her. And the kids had a great time on the rides and eating hot dogs. And it was just a really lovely day. And then we all piled in the 7 train on Sunday afternoon and went out to the baseball game, also with my sister, who is fantastic, and the, like, rest of my entire family. And it was a wonderful game. We didn't stay for the whole thing, but the kids were so, so happy. And everybody celebrated on the train when they actually did win the game. It was a lovely weekend. My kids are awesome. Everybody should love my kids as much as I do. And I'm just really glad I had it. I'm really glad the Mets capped it off with this fantastic game. So that's my walk-off win.
Yay. Yay, baseball.
I know, like, seeing it. everybody's like videos from the Pete home run, like from the crowd, I'm like, I'm not gonna see any more games at Citi Field.
I know, Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is Jacob deGrom. I feel like he's been my boy ever since he stepped foot onto a baseball diamond, because he just kind of got thrown into the game against the Yankees. And then he just pitched his little heart out. And then I think the Mets were like, their pitchers had been like 0 for like 65 or something at the plate that year. And then he just comes, gets a hit, and it's like he was doing it all. So ever since then, like, he had me at hello, basically. And then this year, like, somehow, like, it just seemed like he took a back seat. Like, he was still so good, but, you know, Pete was making headlines, and, you know, McNeil and the puppy, and there was just so much going on that, you know, Jake's consistency, I think, kind of gets taken for granted. And then you look up at the end of the year, and it's like, oh, wait, he's going to be the Cy Young, or has a very good chance of being the Cy Young. And I mean, he's unquestionably the best pitcher of my lifetime. Like, other people have had good seasons, and but nothing like his consistency that he's become known for. And I don't know if we appreciate him enough, because he doesn't steal the spotlight. He doesn't, you know, seek the attention that others do, which is fine, but I think he should just be appreciated a little more, because I adore him. And I think he did try to step into the role a little bit that David Wright left behind. Like, again, Tim Healy pointed out, unprompted, after every start, Jake shouted out Wilson Ramos. So I feel like he was just trying to, like, smooth that over, smooth the drama over. So I think he did try to be the leader in the clubhouse and fill that role that, you know, David left behind. And it might take multiple people to fill that role that David left behind. But, you know, signing the contract, knowing that he's going to be here long term, and knowing that, you know, after the three bad starts, he completely turned it around, and knowing what he's capable of, and that he's still Jake. He's still our Cy Young, and we have him for another 5 years. So I appreciate Jake, even though I do adore Pete, but I haven't forgotten about you. I still love Jake too. So that's my walk-off win, and I hope his name gets called come November.
Love Jake. Should be a lock. I mean, it's not as much of a lock as last year, but it should really be a lock. Yeah, I agree with you, Linda, and I've said this a lot when the like hate of like Matt Harvey or Noah Syndergaard like rears its ugly head on occasion, when people talk about like how they dislike those players, or like Cespedes, for example. I talk about how like having a mix of personalities in the clubhouse that are all leaders in their own ways is what makes a team great. Mm-hmm. And I think that the current version of the Mets has that, kind of the way that the 2015 Mets had that. And I feel that Jake's role has always been the quiet lead by example leader.
Yes. And I don't know if you saw it, but SNY tweeted after Pete was finished all his on-the-field interviews, after he broke the home run record, you know, the whole dugout was cleared, and then he went down the tunnel, and Paul Sewald and Jake were still waiting for him to give him one last congratulations. So that was, like, you know, I thought that was like emblematic of who Jake was, like off to the shadows, like off to the side, but still there for his teammates when they need him.
Yeah. Just always quietly doing his job, never throwing his teammates under the bus, always being a team player. That's Jake. And like guys like Syndergaard and Cespedes, obviously Cespedes hasn't been much of a presence this year because he's been hurt, but Cespedes, when he's around, are the guys that bring the swag, and every good team needs that. They need guys that bring the swag, and guys that aren't afraid to speak their minds and like be funny on Twitter and like things like that. And that's what Syndergaard and Cespedes and Harvey, when he was still on the Mets, were like. And then you've got guys like Pete and David Wright that are like the public, and Curtis Granderson is another good example of that. They're like the public ambassadors of the team that like are the media presence, the guys that take the questions after the games. Cause like, as great as Jake is, he clearly isn't super comfortable with the media. Like he's never mean about it, never refuses to answer questions, but he doesn't enjoy being in the spotlight. There are guys like David Wright and Pete Alonso and Curtis Granderson that are just naturals in front of the camera, in front of the media, and interacting with the media and the fans that have that leadership capability. So I feel like all those things working together in synergy is what makes a really good clubhouse environment.
Yeah.
So my walk-off win for this week is kind of similar to Maggie's in the sense that it encompasses like the entire weekend. I just had a really nice weekend. I went up to visit Michael at New Paltz where he lives, and we went on a hike on Sunday. We hiked Mount Beacon. Linda, I'm sure, is familiar since it's in her general
it's very pretty.
Neck of the woods. The Mid-Hudson is a gorgeous like area of the country. I just, every time I go up there, because, you know, obviously, New Paltz is a little further north, and Yorktown Heights, where my grandma was from and where my dad grew up, is a little further south in that like Mid-Hudson swath. But like that whole area of the state of New York is just so beautiful, and there's like so many hikes you can do there that I've like haven't done enough of. I have hiked Mount Beacon once before, but you know, I feel like I'm excited to explore that area a little more now that I'm back in, you know, the tri-state area. So
we got married in Beacon.
Oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It was, we did not hike. We just got married, but it was beautiful for that part at least.
Actually, one of my best friends from college, he's getting married next May. I'm in the wedding, and he's getting married in Beacon, so I wonder if it's the same like venue.
We will check out afterwards.
Yeah, we can.
If so, then I enthusiastic thumbs up.
Good.
Hooray. Good for you.
Yeah, so Michael and I hiked Mount Beacon, and it was really, really nice, you know, beautiful views. It was like the perfect weather, like 68 degrees and sunny. It was just like perfect. The weather could not have been better. The views were gorgeous. We got a little lost on the way down, but it was actually fine because we were just like, eh. And then we just like meandered back. We didn't have to be back at a certain time, so it was just like a little fun diversion. And then we just,
it's the best.
I know, right? And then we just got back like just in time to watch the game afterwards, because the games were all at the same time on Sunday, obviously. So they were all at like 3 p.m. So we like hiked in the morning, got back in the afternoon just in time to watch the game, enjoyed the game together, got to watch the awesome Dom Smith walk off and just like be emotional about how awesome this season has been. It was just like a really good day. It was a nice day. So that is
Have you ever been to the Mohonk Preserve up there?
No, I have not, but I know of it.
Yes, you should do that too.
Yeah. We have plans to visit the Angry Orchard Brewery as well.
Oh, yeah.
Sometime in November. So very excited for that as well. So that is my walk-off win. Just like a very pleasant Sunday. It was very nice. So that does it for the show this week. Kind of a quick programming announcement. So like I mentioned at the top of the show, this is the last, quote, regular season episode of the podcast. However, we are not going away during the off season. We are not leaving your feeds, we promise. We're not abandoning you. We are having episodes slightly less often, but we're still having them. The idea is that we're going to start having them every other week or so. And Amazing Avenue Audio, the whole network, is going to sort of rotate our podcasts where we'll have 2 1 week, 2 of the shows the next week, and then the shows will be on alternating weeks. So that's kind of our general off-season plan schedule. For the off-season, we have lots of fun interviews planned for you guys. We're trying to get some really cool folks on the pod. So that's going to be our priority during the off-season, is just to get a bunch of new voices on the pod that you guys haven't heard before. So we're really excited about that, trying to get that worked out. You know, maybe a fun book club here and there, like we mentioned. Lots of fun things to talk about, and obviously whatever moves the Mets make or do not make, as the case may be, we will be there to cover it during the off season. So we will not be leaving you. But in the meantime, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com, check out all of our Mets-related content. The season may be over, but we are not done at Amazing Avenue. We never are. We have our season review series has just started up, so pretty much every day for the next few weeks, we're going to be having a season review of a player. So we have that going. We have Linda's article on a lot of what we talked about today, just the fun moments from the 2019 season will be going up soon, along with all sorts of other content. So check that out. Go to AmazingAvenue.com. We read all of our fantastic content. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
You can follow all of us on Twitter, all of our lovely co-hosts on Twitter. You can follow the show. You can email the show, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. I'm sure we'll be doing mailbag segments during the off-season, too. So if you have something you want us to talk about during one of our off-season shows, please shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original music for this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.